Hello, friends. If you haven't guessed it, this is We Have Thoughts, because we have thoughts, and it's been a minute because, you know, things happen. But now it's that time of year. It's our conversations with Oscar. We're very excited. I'm Joy.
I'm Crystal.
And I'm Anna.
And today we are talking about Judas and the Black Messiah. And because to me, everything always ties back to Lady Gaga. So thanks, Lady Gaga, for that really great song. Judas and the Black Messiah was nominated for six Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, Best Supporting Actor for both Daniel Kaluuya and Lakeith Stanfield, Best Original Screenplay, Best Cinematography, and Best Original Song. So, ladies, what do we think?
It was all right. Can you imagine?
Dang.
Can you imagine? It was okay.
I think moving is a good word to use. Impactful, powerful. I knew it was going to be good because of people involved, and I'm a fan of pretty much everyone. But I think I wasn't anticipating how blown away I felt afterwards. It was phenomenal to me, what I would say.
Yeah, my dad said it was one of the best movies he's seen in a long time.
Wow, good job, Dad.
Yeah. I'm proud of him and his taste most of the time.
Look at him. His taste is evolving. He has a more sophisticated palate now.
Well, he's always had good taste in movies. But he's also likes the big thing, so.
You know, people are a multitude of shades, you know? So.
Yeah, I mean, look at, he raised me, who enjoys cheesy Hallmark shit, so.
This movie was so good, and I knew it was going to be great from the first trailer that I ever saw, because the first trailer I was like sitting down and like could not imagine what is in front of my eyeballs. First of all, that Daniel Kaluuya gets another really great role, for him to shine in. And then Lakeith Stanfield, who's been doing really solid work for a long time. And just the whole thing really came together, and just, I think after we watched the movie, we were just sitting on the couch like, holy shit, like, what did we just watch? That was insane.
I wish I had watched it under different circumstances. I watched it during Texas snowpocalypse, snowvid, whatever you want to call it.
I haven't heard that one yet.
Oh, really? Yeah, it was snowvid. I watched it at my sister's house where I was shacked up because my house had no power. So I watched it with her and her husband, and it was fine, but we did end up like stopping it halfway through the movie and then finished it the next day. So my viewing wasn't as continuous, and so I would have preferred to have watched it by myself, you know. Mm-hmm. Just so I could take it all in, but it was really powerful. It was really great. I had no idea what it was about starting. I think I'd only really seen like a teaser trailer. I don't think I'd ever seen a full length trailer. I used to love watching trailers. Like back when iTunes had like a trailers app, I would just go through and watch trailer after trailer after trailer. But over the last couple of years, I've noticed that trailers either sell you on a completely different movie than they're actually showing, or they show you the entire movie.
Yeah.
So I don't, more recently, I don't like watching trailers. So like I haven't seen a single trailer for Falcon and the Winter Soldier that comes out on Friday. So oh, I'm God. So excited to like know nothing. I've seen nothing. Same with WandaVision. I didn't watch any trailers, but anyway, so I didn't really know what I was getting into when I sat down. But then as soon as the movie started, I had just, like, the week before watched The Trial of the Chicago 7. And so when they said Fred Hampton, I was like, oh, well, fuck, I know how this ends. I just watched this. I mean, it's just a moment in the movie, but I was like, I already know where this is going and I don't like it.
Oh.
So yeah, it was a little spoiled for me on that front, but it was still a great movie.
Yeah, I knew about Fred Hampton and all that stuff. I just didn't know anything about the Bill O'Neill. I didn't know about him being an informant and about him, you know, all that other stuff. I had no idea. So that part of it was new to me. But, you know, Fred Hampton stuff, I didn't learn in school. I didn't learn as a child or as a young adult. I learned by seeking it out as a full-grown adult. So it's interesting because this movie is so well-crafted, and I feel like it should be shown to children. Maybe high school kids, I think. Because we used to watch movies in school all the time, but, like...
They were, like...
not anything like this, I don't think.
No, we watched, what was the Tom Hanks movie where he's in the war and then he goes to other places and what was it?
Saving Private Ryan?
Meets JFK. Tom Hanks. Forrest Gump.
Oh, yeah, we weirdly watched Forrest Gump and I'm like, a stupid what does amount this have of to times. Do with,
I never watched Forrest Gump in school.
Really? We watched it in history class all the time.
We watched Wolf Walkers or Talker. It was like a Nicolas Cage war movie in Spanish class. I was like, that's nothing to do with what we're talking about.
In the fifth grade, we watched, what's it called? American Revolution. Heath Ledger was in it.
Oh, Patriot!
The Patriot. We had to get a...
I love this game.
We had to get a signed permission slip because it was rated R. And they skipped over, like, a certain scene or two. But we watched The Patriot in the fifth grade. But I feel like most movies I watched were in English. They were the books we were reading.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which, we're kind of history at the same time. Because, you know, we would watch, what was that awful book we read? I'm sure it wasn't awful. It just bored me to tears at the time.
Was it War and Peace?
No, I actually want to go back and read War and Peace after seeing Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or was it Crime and Punishment? No, Crime and Punishment was the boring one.
The boring one for me that, again, maybe it's a good book, but for me, I was like, I hate this because it was Animal Farm.
Oh, I liked Animal Farm.
Again, maybe I'll read it as an adult because I was like, ninth grade or something? And I was like, this sucks. I hate it. Maybe I want to read it now and I'll be like, okay, this is good. But at the time, I was like, ew.
I thought it was so weird. I don't think I quite understood it enough.
Yeah, same.
I was like, why are these animals talking? Like, this is so weird.
Yeah. This isn't a Disney movie. I don't get it.
Yeah. But no, we read this weird book my eighth grade year that I can't remember. I'll have to look it up later. It was just very boring to me.
But I guess back to the movie.
Now let's keep talking about English reading assignment.
Do it. Give me your favorite English books ever.
Yeah. Anyways, so what a surprise. Lakeith Stanfield in Best Supporting Actor.
Very happy about it.
I'm very happy he got nominated, but he definitely should have been in lead.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Lead is where he should have been.
I think we can, I don't know. I haven't seen The Father or Mank yet, so I can't officially say, but I think I can take Gary Oldman out of there. He already has an Oscar. He does the same stuff a lot of the time. And I would have put Lakeith Stanfield in there. I had an ideal lineup for best actor that I really wanted this year, and it looked like it could have been possible, but it was for all five slots to be men of color because there were so many great leading man performances this year. And it really would have been great if we have the three that we have now and then add in there Lakeith Stanfield. And because I've heard a lot of critics talk and a lot of Crystal talk, Delroy Lindo from Defy Bloods. Ideally, my best actor category.
That's Joy's picks.
Yeah. That my picks? Yeah, it would have been all men of color.
As much as I agree that it was never going to happen because Anthony Hopkins, they've been talking about that performance.
Forever.
That was even in the conversation.
Plus, he's Anthony Hopkins. Like,
yeah. Right. And, like, I don't blame them because I love
him. He's an old white man that I love, so I'm not going to.
Yeah, I'm like, I have to, I'm, It's Anthony Hopkins, so it's okay. The acting in this, like, not to, like, make it all about that, but honestly, the acting in this was just so fucking good.
Yeah, on so many levels, too, because, like, what Daniel Kaluuya is doing with the accent, it's very good. He's talking to someone and he's like leaning with his forehead. It's very interesting how he's talking to everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, he's Stanfield. He's saying so much with his eyes. Like, he's like, I think in one of the first scenes where, like, they go, I think they're confronting, like, that white group or something, and you can't, like, he can't help but, like, smile, chuckle a little bit. Like, you know, this is cool that he's, like, doing this, you know, whatever. And then Dominique Fishback, who is at later when the powerful moving scene where Fred Hampton is giving his speech when he gets out of jail. First of all, that whole scene is phenomenal. But Dominique Fishback is conveying so many things in her emotions. Like, her tears are saying so many things. You know, she's worried about her child and the future. She's worried for him. She's proud of him, but also worried what's going to happen to him. Then you have Lakeith, like, seeing Jesse Plemons, who is also really good, stare at him, and Jesse Plemons, the way he just claps, and just all that whole entire sequence is phenomenal. Like, I feel like that scene's going to be studied by other people for their movies, because that, I just...
Just everybody was, like, on their game.
And then as an audience member, like, I'm moved to tears because Daniel Kaluuya is, like, it's, I read this, listened to this podcast where Daniel Kaluuya was saying that he took voice lessons because he wanted to build his stamina, his voice stamina with his, because to him he felt like Fred's speeches had a melody to them. And he wanted to, he's like, I'm not a singer, so I wanted to learn some gospel songs and get that, like, train that into my brain. So I took all of that I learned, singing-wise, and put it into my speeches. And I thought that was really interesting, you know?
What a brilliant, I'm, sorry, I do not, my words are not with me today.
It's okay.
But what a brilliant,
like, speaker?
Craftsman. Like, thought to, in order to do this better, I need to do this. Like, it wasn't required. It's not like he had to learn how to box for a scene, or he had to learn how to tap dance for a scene. But he thought, this is what's going to help me do this better, so I'm going to do this. And I think that's wonderful.
Right, because he said, he's like, that's a muscle I've never flexed before. So I need to go to the source, and I need to do my homework so I can
do this
properly.
Not everybody, nobody really gives off speeches like that ever.
Yeah, right.
Unless you're like a pastor or a politician or something where you're used to like talking like that. But what I thought was so brilliant about Daniel Kaluuya's performance was he was really great at being super intense and the speeches, and he was firing off and he was saying what needed to be said, and he was so brilliant. And then he had these really great quiet moments.
Yes.
And he was so good at those. Like, there wasn't, it didn't feel like two different people. It felt like just the same guy. And you were just, it was, I thought his performance was beautiful.
Yeah,
and
it stood out really well.
I mean, I think right now he's probably the favorite to win. And
oh, definitely. For sure.
Fine by me.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. Literally. I think they did a really good job. I was watching some interviews with the cinematographer, Sean Bobbitt, who has actually worked with Daniel Kaluuya before, and he was, like, praising his performance so much because since he's the one, like, right behind the camera, Daniel Kaluuya is essentially giving all of his performance just to the camera. And so he was saying that, like, I got the full power of all of his performance right in my face. And I was like, I can't even imagine what an incredible experience that would have been. Mm. And then because the way that they shot it, he was saying that the director, Shaka King, wanted it to feel like these are real people. You get real intimate moments with them. You get these big crowd moments, but you also get a lot of intimate moments where you can see that, like, they're just a person and they still have likes and dislikes and they just happen to be, like, really really wise and really invested in the care and the love of other people, especially, you know, yeah. their group of people. And so they did really great things with the camera work in order to be able to, like, get those really nice close-up shots of everybody. And just the way they block that, the way they shot that was yeah. so
oh, the blocking
genius.
Sure.
Yeah, especially yeah. in particular yeah. that scene.
Right off the bat, in like the opening sequence of the film where Lakeith is getting out of the car and he's going, that like circle thing that the camera yeah. did,
fantastic.
I immediately was like, okay, I'm in.
Right. I like more. The jump, it hooks you. Like, same with the score. When you first hear it, it's commanding, and it looks just drawing you in immediately. And I really like that. Kind of yeah. going off what you said about the quiet moments, I like that Dominique Fishback and, oh my God, what's her name? The character's name? His wife? Oh no.
Barbara.
Manatee. No. I'm sorry. Dominique Fishback and Daniel Kaluuya, all of their scenes together feel very romantic. They feel
very sweet.
It was like it's straight out of like a
and loving and like you feel drama. the affection that they have for each other. Like that scene when he's getting out of jail and she's waiting for him and he sees her that she's pregnant and just his soft hand touching her and his eyes looking at her. Like it's gorgeous. And it's like it's such a beautiful moment in this like really heavy movie. I think the back and forth of that with like you said with the quiet moments and the intensity, it's really, really good.
Their romance was the perfect light touch to some yeah. heavy moments. That their first romantics, where they first kiss, and that yeah. after everybody's gone
in
and
the kitchen.
Like, oh yes! Oh, I love so this. Cute. It's so cute.
So cute.
She's so adorable. I love her. But real quick, I mean, directing is a stacked category this
yes.
season. But I would not have minded seeing
Chaka King
in there.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, definitely.
There's already like so many, there's so many extras that I could add into directing category. Directing category this year could have been 10 and I would have been
right.
fine.
Right. Yeah. No, like I said, stacked category.
The score of it actually was really, really great. It went a lot of places. Like in the beginning, it kind of sounded like an alarm, like a siren, definitely a warning right before like Heath's whole little sting blows up in his face. And then the piano score whenever they're having their first kiss moment in the kitchen. It's very dynamic. It has a lot of ups and downs. And
I've said it before, oftentimes when I'm first watching a movie, the score doesn't stick out to me. And I'll be honest, I do not remember the score at all. I need to go back and re-listen. I have no memory of it.
I think I lost my note. I like how it feels. Like, did you ever see The Departed, Anna?
No.
Okay. To me, this movie, when I watched it, I thought, this feels very The Departed. It's very, like, Scorsese-type, mafia-type situation. I like the back and forth. Like, you see, you know, Bill O'Neill and what he's going through and how he's having to deal with this. But then you see, like, Fred Hampton and his situation. So, like, I like the whole back and forth of, like, you know, is he really a good guy? Does he like what he's doing? Like, all this is really interesting. Because it's so easy to label Bill O'Neill as a traitor. You know, I feel like just, like, on the surface, you can be like, oh, he's a traitor. But he became an informant because he was a criminal. But then you could argue he was a criminal because he was a black man in America. You know? So it's, like, it's...
The layers.
Yeah, yes. It's so...
He is an onion.
Yes, very much an onion. Because there's one of those mini scenes in the restaurant with Jesse Plemons, who... I love Justin. I think he's fantastic.
Me too.
Actor. He's a yes. phenomenal actor.
Another white man that I support.
Yes, he is great. He stays in his lane. Don't mess with nobody. He's good. Jesse Plemons, that scene with him in the restaurant, and he's like, "Well, you have to do it. Like, you can say no, but like, this is not really an option. Like, I need you to do this. And that's it. Whatever." And even with Jesse Plemons, it's smaller, but his whole thing where he like. Yeah, you're a nice guy, Bill, but I also have a job to do. Yeah. And so even him, he's like, well, these guys are not the best, but like, It's kind of like, well, whatever. I'm not the mean one, so it's okay type of situation.
Like, they're not gonna hold responsibility for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he doesn't really want
to... It's trying to wipe yourself of the guilt you're feeling.
Yeah, so that's... I mean, movies have been based on that little thing forever. But, like, I feel like even within the small amount that he had, Jesse Plemons did have some type of, like, shades to him as well. So I thought that was really interesting.
I loved how... Jesse Plemons, I mean, I don't know how much of this is steeped in the truth, but how he made Bill O'Neill feel special by bringing him to his home and saying, like, make yourself comfortable. Here's a drink. He took him to the fancy restaurants. Like, he made him feel like this was so important and you're an important person and I need you. And I thought that was just, it was brilliant. And you could see its effect on Bill O'Neill. So clearly, like, he was like, the way he was like snapping at waiters and getting their attention, like, he was like, look at me, I'm the shit.
I'm sure he's never really had the chance or the opportunity to be in those kind of spaces in that particular way and command that sort of power and attention. But it's also like a very interesting way to manipulate someone to be more sympathetic towards you. Just be like, look, I'm doing nice things for you. So, you know, I'm a good person. I'm helping you out here. You know, this is what you're going to get. These are the benefits you're going to have if, you know, you stick with me, even though he knows. And that's the big conflict for his character, is that, like, he knows what he's doing is wrong, but he has almost no choice, given that he's going to serve a fuck ton of jail time.
But what I love is that you can see those moments where he kind of forgets that he's doing this because he has to.
Right.
Because he has been made to feel important. He's been made to feel valuable. So there's those moments where, like, he tells them something and he feeds them a line or something. And then he walks out and he's like, yeah, look what I did.
Yeah, he's proud of himself.
He's proud of himself. And,
yeah.
And then it's like he's forgetting how he got there.
Another thing that's really just props to Lakeith Stanfield and also the writing for, like, how there's always a reaction, there's always a consequence, there's always a moment where you get some camera time just with Lakeith, and he's like, it's giving you, like, the full weight of what he's doing. Even if in the moment he's, like, enjoying it.
Yeah, exactly. I think what's interesting about me is I didn't know, or not about me, about the movie, is that what I knew for Fred Hampton was that he fought for civil rights and he got killed. That's basically what I knew. I didn't know much else. I didn't know that he, like, got all these different groups together to rally against the police. I had no idea. And I've said this before. I don't know if it was on the podcast, maybe not. But I've said before where, like, I've always wanted to have a civil rights movement story told from the Hispanic perspective. Because at least I know with, like, my mom's dad, he would always talk about how, like, he never really knew where he fit in. Because in some places he could be a colored person. And in some places he considered white. So, like, he would kind of have to survey the area. Like, he's like, yeah, I would go into a place and I'd start to walk into the white restroom, but I remember, oh wait, I'm in this part of the town, so I have to go to the colored restroom, certain situations. So I was, when I saw it was Puerto Ricans, right?
Yeah, the Puerto Ricans.
When I saw that, I was like, oh my God, awesome. Like, I've always wanted these type of people in these movies, because it's so to see him, like, rally those people together and speak to them. And I love how when he goes to those white guys and he's like, he doesn't talk down to them. He doesn't say, you know, you're stupid, I'm smart. He appeals to them. He talks to them like people. He knows, like, listen, we got a common enemy. We got to figure this out together. We're stronger together than apart. And he did it. He got these people to fall. That's like Jesus-like to me. Do you know
what I mean? He's literally Jesus. Like, he literally did it.
Literally the Black Messiah.
Oh my God.
Two things on that. First, my family, and Joy, you probably have something similar. My family grew up in South Texas in what we call the Rio Grande Valley or the Valley. So down there, it's primarily Mexican. Like, that is 99.9% of the population. So when my family eventually made the move up to North Texas, there was this moment of there's colored water fountains and there's white water fountains. And it's like, where do we go?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's very real. And I think that's an important story that, Crystal, let's write a movie.
I mean, I'm more of an idea person. I'm a terrible writer. I don't know.
Anna's the writer. You're the idea.
I can barely speak.
Let's do the research.
Crystal will do the direction. You will do the writing. I'll shoot it.
You know what? It could start as a documentary. It's just interviewing people. But like, hey, tell us your story. What was it like growing up here? Because my mom's dad spent a lot of time up north. So it was even worse. So he was getting it everywhere, you know, blah, blah, blah. I just think, yeah, like, that's just, it's a side of the story that no one ever talks about.
Mm-mm.
And it, because a lot of the times these civil rights movies feel very, like, black and white. And it wasn't that. It was so many different people that were involved in it that aren't seen. So I Anna, let's write it. Let's do it.
It's okay. It's really interesting too, because once you like this was in Chicago, like, and then you move towards what was happening in LA in California in that area,
mm-hmm.
and the different cultures and groups of people there, because like you also have, you know, the Asian American population that was simultaneously being like, no, you're quote unquote foreign, you're, you know, from over there or whatever, but they're also like putting down roots and like living here, and you know, their kids are born here. Same way that also, other people have.
Also part of the Asian community not too long before that were just camps.
We're camps. Yeah. They were in internment camps. So
internment,
like,
internment. Thank you.
Yeah.
So
I
like,
the word, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
We could go on an entire hours and hours long podcast about mm-hmm. the failed education system in America. But
I think that's like years worth of episodes.
We could do a whole separate podcast broken into seasons upon seasons. But I just want to say, like, there's so much American history that's not being taught.
Yeah.
Like, I knew nothing about the Black Panthers growing up. I maybe heard the name. You know, but didn't know what it was, didn't know who they were, what they were about. The Japanese internment camps were just barely mentioned when talking about World War II and Pearl Harbor. Like, there are stories of these American stories that just aren't taught, and it's bullshit.
It's the same thing with, like, Hidden Figures. Like, those three women were doing astonishing things that
they literally got us to space.
We never heard of. Like, I was and a full-on adult when that movie came out. And I was like, what? This happened? Like, I learned about literally everyone else in that movie but those three. That's nuts to me. Like,
and also goes back to, like, the thing about Fred Hampton was that he understood that you do have a common enemy. And the only way that you're going to be able to find to achieve freedom is through intersectionality. You can't think that you're better than someone else just because of who you are, where you come from, or whatever. Like, if we had that mindset that he had and made that, you know, connection and reached that level of like enlightenment that he had, that wisdom, intersectionality is where it all goes together. Because if you give freedom, if you achieve freedom, that means freedom for everybody. Like, it's just, you can't have one without the other. And just like he said, like, we're not gonna win, we're not gonna be safe, we're not gonna, you know, get our needs met if you don't either.
Who was that? What was that first group that we saw him interacting with? The more hardcore.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I don't remember. Their I don't names. Remember either. I don't think I wrote them down.
Because that's another group I know nothing
exactly.
about.
Exactly.
I don't even remember their name.
Yeah, that's not great.
So it baffles me that, you know, here I am almost 30 and I'm still learning American history.
No, same. Yeah.
And you know what? Like, even so, like, I did know about Fred Hampton and I did know a little bit about the Black Panther Party and what they were doing and their their free meals and their free clinics and things like that. But I only ever learned that in college. And, like, college is not cheap. So it's not like everybody's afforded this, like, these resources. So, like, that's the extent that you have to go to be actually educated in American history.
What class was that?
I think it was my English class. Because we were doing, like, reading several essays, and one of them was about I'm not sure if it was Red Hampton, but it was about the Black Panther Party. But, like, that's, like, you can't just, yeah, okay, and also, like, that's the other thing, like, okay, so if we really deep dived into these topics, into this portion of history, that's going to be, like, an elective class. That's going to be, like, African-American history.
I was going to say, I didn't learn any of that in my two U.S. history classes in college.
Yeah.
It was all repetitive from
the same shit you learned in elementary and high school, yeah.
Yeah.
So, no.
I think I really like the conversation of war versus politics. You know, like, war is politics with bloodshed, and politics is war without bloodshed. I really like that when I think he's talking to the other group. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. He's right.
Yeah.
He's making points.
Yeah, he is. And that's why people... That's why, like, people gravitated towards him. That's why people, I mean, liked what he was saying, because he had reached the truth.
He had reached
the core of what the issue was. And that was it. There's so many good fucking lines in this. There's so much.
Revolution is, like, the only solution.
It really is. Yeah. It really is. Did it get screenplay, did it?
Yes, it did.
It did get screenplay. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. I'm interested to know. I really would love to read Fred Hampton's speeches, because I know they did take a lot of direct. They took some direct quotes from, like, some of the speeches that he had given. So I'd like to see how much of that was in there. I really, honestly, would just like to read his speeches, because there's just so much good stuff in there. The way he was able to, like, call to arms everybody.
So the cinnamon is all you. So any good shots you want to give?
Oh my God, I have so many. Dude, the cinnamon, I literally wrote down, the cinnamon is so good. Only one page into my notes. That's how good it is. Okay, the cinnamon, let's go. The lighting in the car, which we did touch on Lakeith when he gets that new car. The shot from the front of the car, because you have that warm tone on him. You have the cool tone from the bar. You have the color of the car. Delicious. The shots inside of his apartment with the two windows, and he's silhouetted in one window. Do you remember that?
Yes,
the parallel shot with the windows. It was just delicious. In the warm light, the lighting, in the general lighting. Okay, so, like, the interview with Sean Babbitt that I was reading, the lighting was very important, because when they shot the stuff with the FBI, with the FBI and the president, was it Johnson? Reagan? No, Reagan was way later.
What was his name?
One of the presidents.
Hoover,
right?
Hoover.
Whatever. Michael Sheen. Yeah, whoever it was.
Was that the president? I thought that was FBI.
Yeah, because he was an FBI person before he was a president, I think. I believe, if my American history is correct.
Margie.
Anyways.
He is Mr. President. He's President Bartlett for life.
Anyways, so, like, he is the president. Anything shot with the FBI, they tried to make it in, like, really harsh, cool tones, or, like, limiting the color in that.
Nice.
And then whenever you were with the Black Panthers and with Fred and them, it was all, like, more brighter, more vibrant tones. They specifically painted most of the locations where the Black Panthers were at, like, so, like, the office and then the house in green, to have that really bright Uh-huh. light bounce off of them. Yes. So the lighting was really important. And you can definitely tell, because it's so much warmer. It's so much more inviting. And, like, that green was really, like, the color of youth. So they wanted to keep the tone of, like, really showing how young these people are, because Fred Hampton was 21.
21 years old. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. That I did not know.
Neil was 17.
What? I didn't know. Okay.
Which only makes
it. They were shooting children. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my
And you know, that was the whole thing, is that like it was not that it was easy, but it was like Bill getting manipulated into this. It's just so much worse because like he's a teenager. Like, first of all, he didn't really have much of a choice. Second of all, he's, like you said, Black in America.
Question. And I love Lakeith and Daniel, but do you think having younger actors would have been a good idea?
So I did. I was reading up on, question. When I was reading up on this, is that was the only criticism that they really had for the movie.
Oh, okay.
And I would be like, that is a fair criticism, because as much as I love them and as good as actors they were, like, I feel like they had to mention that Fred was 21, because otherwise, like, you're like, okay, they're my age. Like, they're young adults. They're young adults.
They were, you can definitely tell that Daniel Kaluuya is a man and Lakeith Stanfield is a man. They aren't young boys.
Yeah. They were really just like young, very young adults, like freshly into adulthood. But
what do you think, Anna?
I think if they were younger, it would have been that much more of a gut punch to watch these young boys playing in this adult world, you know, like Bill O'Neill being just 17. And of course he's going to act like he's on top of the world when he's dining with this FBI agent. And like, he's so young and so impressionable. It's a little bit different when you see an adult man doing it. Yeah. And it's a bit different when you see this adult man giving these speeches. But if it were a young man, I think that it would hit different. But at the same time, if Fred, what's his last name?
Hampton.
I wanted to say Hamilton. Fred Hampton was played by a younger man. I don't know how, if he would have been as believable, you know,
okay,
to be saying those words. I think it would be so much more impactful if it was from a younger guy. But I think there would be some people who would have a harder time believing it coming from a younger man.
Yeah.
What about you? That's where I sit.
I was just posing the question for discussion purposes. I can see the reasons why they didn't like that, or they prefer they be younger. But like you said, it'd be a different movie. It would be different impact. And I think those guys are so great in those roles that it's like, anybody else, it just wouldn't be the same movie.
I would have been interested, because he said that in an interview I watched with Chaka King, he had said that a movie about Fred Hampton's life has been made before. And I think he said Forrest Whitaker was attached to trying to make the film many years ago. So that they've tried to do this before. It just never really came together, you know. It never really came to fruition. So this was finally when they were able to kind of make this project happen. But it would have been interesting to see if, let's say, 10 years ago, they did it with young Daniel Kaluuya and young Lakeith Stanfield, and like what that would have looked like. Because like, I remember seeing Daniel Kaluuya act at that age, and he looks young. He looks like a baby. Like,
yeah.
I mean... if we could have had this happen 10 years ago, that would have been perfect.
But do you think he would have been able to give the same performance?
I don't know, because obviously like he's grown a lot in his acting, and especially as someone who's seen him act over the years, like he has developed himself in a way that you can see on the screen because of his education through the years.
I think how they could have fixed that was maybe like, show Lakeith at school, or maybe show like Fred like talking about how, oh yeah, just last year, whatever, something to the effect of just mentioning it. It doesn't have to be a full scene, just like a throwaway line, so we as the audience know, oh yeah, they're young. Because I went through the whole movie not realizing that he was that young. And so in the credits, I was like, it felt like a shot to the heart, because I was like, oh, he was a child. That's my brother's age. Like, that's wild to me. Oh my God. And then I cried again because I was like, ah! Ugh. Yeah, I see the point, but it's, yeah, you know. Yeah.
You could.
Either way, I guess.
You could do either or.
Really? Yeah.
Obviously, it worked this way.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, there was this, one of the time, I don't even know what they were doing, but one of the times, there was a cop who had, like, a New York accent, and I was like, aren't they in Chicago?
Yeah!
I thought that was really funny.
That was a
Chicago also has a pretty distinct accent.
But it was clearly New York, though. Right, well played. Which was really funny to me.
One more second, back to the cinnamon, real quick.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
So they were shooting it, like, Ektachrome and Kodachrome, which is like the color film that they used back then. So that's why it had those like very vintage looking colors. I lost it. Okay, so Sean Bobbitt has also worked with Steve McQueen in a very great movie that you should all watch called Widows. And his cinematography in that movie was just as good as in this movie.
Listen. My face. Anna took a screenshot of the chat we're having.
Because my baby made an appearance.
Joy and I will die on the hill that is Widows for the rest of our lives. I'm going to continue to champion that movie forever. It's criminal it was not recognized in anything ever. People don't even know about it. So anytime Daniel Kaluuya is brought up, I'm going to be like, oh, hi, Widows. Then later when we talk about Viola Davis, I'm going to bring it up again. Widows. Okay.
No, really. And then, don't watch Widows. I think it's on HBO Max now.
Just buy it. You will like. It's phenomenal. It was marketed terribly. It was marketed as some like Ocean's 8 type situation.
Yeah,
it's not even. It's so much more elevated and sophisticated than that. Please watch it. Thank you. That's my TED Talk.
our every episode Widows TED Talk. He also did Shame with Michael Fassbender and Carey Mulligan. And 12 Years a Slave. So he's been working for a long time. And I can, because I've now seen a couple more movies of his, like, he's the real deal. He's really fucking good. He was talking about how Chaka King gave him 300 different photos of Fred Hampton and them in this time period to look at and to kind of help inspire the shots that he was trying to get for the film. And like, if you look at the pictures, yeah, they look pretty fucking close, like colors and everything. It looks good. I love that. I love it and I hate it at the same time, that he was very deliberate in the lighting and how he lit everybody. Because, you know, less talented and stupid people don't know how to light all variety of skin tones because, you know, they're lazy or idiots or both. So the way that they were able to do this, it was just great. Especially a lot of these night scenes. It was so good. You know, not to put some people out there, but like the last couple covers of W Magazine with their shitty, very shitty photography. How dare you do this to John David Washington and many other actors.
He's out of focus. It's a magazine cover. What is this, amateur hour?
I said on Twitter, he looks like he was photoshopped in.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a magazine cover.
Like, bitch, what? No. So to see someone, you know, do their job, like, come on. It really should be the bare minimum. But, like, the lighting in this, just top notch. So many good shots. Okay, last shot. The shot of Fred Hampton walking up the stairs to the church to give his first speech post jail time. Just great. Oh, great, yeah. Tracking. All the way up, because it's like you're really close up on the back of his head, and it's you can feel like his steps going up the stairs. Yeah.
You're walking
and up. Then when it opens up to the wide of the whole church, it was just great. And especially the blocking with everyone there. Just
shot through the people too, when he's like, hey, oh, yeah. That one was really good.
So anyways, this is actually the only Best Cinematography nominee that I've watched. So I'm going to have to watch the rest of them. But so far, obviously, this is my number one.
Nomadland, I think you're really going to enjoy cinematography-wise. Oh,
you keep saying that, and I'm really excited. I'm really excited.
So I think, do you want to go through the ones that was nominated and talk about, like, if we think it should get, do you have any more notes? Are you okay?
I'm good.
Okay, so Best Picture, it's our first one we're doing right now, so it's number one.
I guess I'll put it in the number one slot.
Okay, I think I'm going to go with
one, though, because, you know.
That's a good choice.
So, I don't know. It's made controversial right now, but whatever. Supporting actor. Again, I think we said that it's Daniels to win, honestly.
Fair.
I don't see anyone beating him.
They better not.
We'll get to the other movies that we've seen, but since it wasn't... Since it wasn't nominated, how do you... Did you see One Night Miami?
No, not yet.
Okay.
But I do love me some Leslie Odom.
Girl, he's fucking great. He's fucking great. He sings and he's beautiful and he's just fucking great. I love him.
How do you feel about... Oh, I guess we'll wait till Chicago 7 till we get there. But yes, I think it's Daniels to win. Or to lose, whatever. Original screenplay.
Again, another very stacked category. I know at the beginning, whenever they were talking about pushing the Oscars back to April, when in the beginning of the pandemic,
Panini.
A lot of the Panini, sorry, gross. A lot of people were talking about like, it's gonna be like shit quality movies. Like we're gonna have like Birds of Prey and like Bad Boys for Life, which actually Birds of Prey was great. So shut up. Not this good, but still great. It just seems so stupid to be like, you think that like movies aren't going to happen, that movies didn't get made, that like there's no talent out there. Like, I don't know what the fuck you were thinking that like, okay, so the five movies are going to come out and that's all you're going to get. Like, no. Well, like,
I think there was this fear that nobody was going to want to do it without theatrical releases. Like,
yeah, they panicked. They were like, movie.
Right. Which is ridiculous. Cause like, how long have we had Netflix now and how good has Netflix been doing and Amazon and everybody else? So like you guys, right, whatever. But anyways, so the fact that there's actually like maybe too many really great movies this year is even better because now you have it's much easier access for people to get to be able to watch these movies because you're not just having to go to the movie theater. Like people, you can watch an indie movie at home.
Yeah, I think they should have kept the same
time frame.
But yeah, you're right. Like they didn't know, they panicked or like, they weren't sure if people were going to even see it at all. And then they had to work out the deals with HBO Max. HBO Max wasn't a thing like, you know, six months ago. So it's 6 months ago. So it's play by ear situation, you know? Yeah. So I guess I get it.
I think if you think back to like the end of last season and the beginning of this season, like, remember that movie, First Cow? Everyone was saying was going to be nominated for everything. It's not even here.
Yeah.
Or rarely, sometimes, never rarely, sometimes, always.
Oh, yeah. That's on my list of things to watch, too.
That's on HBO Max.
Right.
I still watched it. Did you watch it?
Yeah. I did, yeah. There is Defy Bloods, which came out, like, the very beginning of the pandemic. And it was supposed to be theaters, but Spike Lee was like, no, I want everyone to see it. So,
cool.
I mean, the conversation, it was too early, but I don't think so. I think it was, the movie's very interesting. Have you seen Anna?
No, I haven't.
I mean, I guess you don't really need to for the awards.
I'm still but I suggest it. Respect.
I just suggest it because I knew what to expect, but I didn't at the same time, especially character-wise and what these characters are representing. So I guess I think it should. I agree. It's original screenplay. It's a warranted nomination. Where else? Cinematography. Agree.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Let's give it to them.
Best original song. Sure. Why not? Good. I like her. Her is great.
Her is great. Oh.
I don't know any of the original songs. Oh, except for the Eurovision song, by the way, Eurovision is fantastic.
I need to watch it. I haven't seen it.
I want to see it.
I'm gonna watch it.
It was so good.
I did see one song from there, and I was like, okay, this is fun.
Music is fantastic.
Have you seen Eurovision, like, the show, like, the actual show?
No, I've never. I've seen, like, bits and pieces of Eurovision, but not the real one. Mm. Not the whole thing.
Is there any award that you think it should have been nominated for that wasn't?
I did put down, when I first watched the movie, I put down Best Editing.
Okay.
I think I would still kind of go with that.
Like I said, Shaka Khan could have King.
Oh, best director. Shaka King.
I was like, wait.
You are every woman.
Yeah.
Oh, Dominique Fishback for best supporting actress.
Yeah, I thought she was really good.
I would have loved that.
so weird this year. So wild.
My Oscar ballot, I got it from Rotten Tomatoes, and it gives you the Rotten Tomato score and the audience score.
I love that.
And we're not going to talk about this movie, so just real quick, Glenn Close is nominated for Best Supporting Actress for Hillbilly Elegy, and it has a Rotten Tomato score of 26.
Wow. What I find really interesting about that, she was nominated for an Oscar and a Razzie for the same role. In the same year.
You know what's funny is I don't know if she'll win, but wouldn't it be funny if Olivia Colman beat her again?
That would be hilarious. I think Sandra Bullock was also nominated for an Oscar and a Razzie for
Blindside. Yes.
And that movie with Bradley Cooper, right? That's the
My Name is Steve.
Something like that, yeah.
Or his Steve. Name is
Steve, it's Bradley Cooper, because I remember the trailer, the poster.
But yeah, that one, so Hillbilly Elegy and The United States versus Billie Holiday are the only two rotten, or with, Billie Holiday has 52%. Those are the only two with low scores.
Having seen Billie Holiday, I would agree with that.
But I haven't heard great things, so.
No. I am... because we're not gonna talk about it, but that movie is very disrespectful to Billie Holiday.
Oh,
I think it's disrespectful to Billie Holiday, to her song "Strange Fruit." I don't know, maybe black people. I can't really speak on that, but I think it's. I mean, Tyrante Rhodes is beautiful.
Yeah. The whole movie, I can see Crystal being very distracted by Tyrante Rhodes every time he was on the screen.
Girl, there is a scene in that movie. Just go read my review on the Letterboxd and it'll tell you what you need to know.
Also read my review on Letterboxd because it is very accurate. Also follow us on Letterboxd.
Instead, go watch Billie Holiday at Emerson's Bar and Grill on HBO. Starring Audra McDonald. She won a Tony for that.
Shut up! I will definitely do that.
It's great.
Also, I think it was Diana Ross also did a movie about Billie Holiday.
She nominated for Oscar.
I want to see that. Now that I've seen this Billie Holiday movie, I want to see that.
Well, I can already tell you it's better because this. You know what? Never mind. I'm offended.
And, objection, Your Honor. I was also in the audience when Audra McDonald won that Tony Award.
Oh, that's right.
Her record-breaking sixth.
I love that for you.
And we all stood and cried for her. It was so moving.
What a moment.
Oh, my God. Anna, for Audra McDonald.
For Broadway.
For Billie Holiday.
Yeah. Wow. What a moment.
Beautiful.
Wow.
But I think that's it, right?
Yeah. I think I'll figure something else to bring up about Judas and the Black Messiah later, but...
We'll tweet about it or something, but I think we covered all the grounds. I'm really excited to get into this.
All the coffee grounds.
I'm really excited to say that. I'm really excited to get into this season. There's a lot of good things. I think this is the first year of my life that I'm the most prepared because the pandemic has given me so much time to watch these movies. The Panini has given me so much time to.
They've been more available to us than previous years.
We haven't had to wait till like the month of to watch.
Although, Crystal, I am really bummed that we're probably not going to be able to do our shorts.
I thought the same thing. I'm so sad.
I might see if I can find a way to make it happen.
Okay, I love you. Please do that. there's a couple on Disney Plus, actually.
I know one of them is on Netflix for animated short.
Okay, I'll seek them out and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
But, that was like our thing. And that was the day we saw the First Call trailer like 60 times in a row. And we were like, all right, Cal, we're in. Let's do it.
Oh, yeah.
I do really want to watch First Call.
Me too.
I've heard wonderful, wonderful things.
Same.
And yes, I guess stay tuned if you like movies or Oscars or Oscar Isaac, whatever. Either
really, this is our Oscar time to shine.
Yeah.
Conversations with Oscars is our shit.
We should change the name to the podcast too.
We just love the Oscar. Fucking Oscars. We love Oscar Isaac. We love the Oscars.
Oscar.
The Grouch.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully someone's still with us after all this time of not being on the air.
Thanks, Janie. Or not Janie. Who's your cousin?
Fry Papipa.
She's a real one.
I love you.
They are pretty fucking cool.
Love it.
Yeah, if you haven't heard our Golden Globes podcast, go listen to that, even though it was a couple weeks ago.
And also, we started the 2015 Oscars, which we will continue after this Oscar season.
Yeah.
So if you want to go listen to...
American Sniper.
I promise our podcast is more entertaining than the movie.
Which, because I read that fucking book, I keep getting advertisements for all kinds of memoirs and...
Ew.
It has fucked up my Amazon book suggestions.
Oh, no.
I'm slowly working it out. But go watch, listen to that one. Make it worth it.
Right?
Literally.
Well, thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah.
Shout out to the homies.
Bye.
Bye.